All year long, the Alabama Public Radio News team has been investigating human trafficking in our state. One way to put trafficking in focus in Alabama is by looking at the numbers. Today, APR's Pat Duggins looks at one figure and what it means. And a note to our listeners, this story contains content of an adult nature that might not be suitable for all ages.
But the fact is that, unfortunately, there is a prevalence of human trafficking throughout the entire state.
That's Christian Lim. He's leading a project at the University of Alabama's College of Social Work on human trafficking in the state. His team spent 2017 conducting interviews around Alabama to get a snapshot of how many suspected victims of trafficking ask for help from the police or social service agencies. Lim says the final number was nearly 1,200. And that's not the disquieting part.
Yeah, clearly whatever we're recovering is a smaller percentage of what's happening.
So small, Lim says, that some estimates put the real figure at 10 times higher. If that's true, then the total could be closer to 12,000, just in Alabama, just in 2017. Lim says the point is that authorities know what they know, but that's it.
So if you flip that on its head, what that means is there's a lot of professionals in our state that are running across victims of human trafficking, but not identifying it and seeing them as victims of human trafficking.
But the College of Social Work found another number that could give an even clearer picture of trafficking in Alabama. It's based on when traffickers come out in the open and advertise on the internet. 2 years ago, the college counted those ads, and the total was 641,000. Just in Alabama, just in 2017.
The biggest problem with getting a realistic number is the people who are most likely to encounter this activity are the participants.
That's Gary Warner. He's a computer analyst in Birmingham. He's referring specifically to the buyers and sellers of trafficking, better known as the Johns and the Pimps.
And both of them are, not likely to report the situation.
At least not voluntarily, and that's where Warner comes in. If you look at trafficking like a business, you have sellers, you have buyers, and you have merchandise, which in this case happens to be people. Warner spends his workday going to where the deals are made.
If we go down further, it says, "Hey, Daddy, if you're looking for," and that's about all we are able to say about this ad on the radio. But if you want to have a great time, contact me, and it lists the telephone number again.
Warner sits in front of a large computer screen. It's cluttered with online ads in Birmingham featuring pictures of young women. Some are unclothed, others are performing sex acts, and many of these messages get specific.
And in this case, she describes many different sex acts she'll perform, and then the prices go as low as $10 for these services, up to $100 if you want her to spend the night with you.
The ads on Warner's computer screen are basic. No flashy videos or graphics, just a photo and a price list. None of these ads gives details on what this person may be going through.
I was forced to stay in a hotel room, so I basically lived in a box for a year.
That's Dixie Shannon. She lives in central Alabama. Shannon isn't in any of the sex ads on Warner's computer screen, but the experience she shared with APR showed what it was like to be trafficked. Shannon says it didn't start with Johns with handfuls of cash. Her trafficker had a process first. It's referred to as grooming.
There was many episodes where, he would test me many times, and then he would use different forms of punishment. He would break me down until I was nothing, and then he would build me a little bit from that, and then break me down again and keep rebuilding me and breaking me down.
Part of Shannon's grooming process was on how to use internet sex ads to drum up business. She was trafficked twice. First, when Shannon was 17, then again in her mid-20s as she was going through a divorce. Gary Warner isn't alone when it comes to studying sex trafficking ads in Alabama. Outside his office, there's a workroom where analysts sit hunched over their own PCs. One of them arrived late. She had a test in Western Civilizations class. This is the Computer Forensics Research Lab at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. Warner's the director. Outside the lab, other UAB students prepare for their next classes. Inside the lab, Warner's crew works to dredge the seamy underbelly of the internet. Technically, their main client is Facebook, but Warner and his team aren't looking for irritating pop-up ads.
So we do this in the area of terrorism, in opioid and fentanyl trafficking, and we were doing this also in the area of sex trafficking for Facebook.
When it comes to sex trafficking in Alabama, Warner says Alabamians are more likely to use the web to arrange hookups, particularly in larger cities like Mobile, Birmingham, and Huntsville.
I think so, and largely because we don't have the same organized crime structure as some of the larger cities.
And that makes them easier to track. Remember that number of online human trafficking ads we talked about earlier, the 641,000? That may sound impressive, but Gary Warner's job is to look below the surface, and his result is different.
It's a much smaller number than 641,000, but it's still a pretty large number.
Here's what Warner means by pretty large. His students use computers to scrape the internet. Their system logs onto trafficking sites and chat rooms and studies the ads for sexual services. That sifting process shows not all of Alabama's sex trafficking ads in 2017 were what they appeared to be.
A lot of them are actually the websites where you see these ads are not making their money by the girls that are being trafficked. They're making their money by affiliate programs that are selling pornography.
We'll talk about how Warner separates the real ads from the fake ones in a minute. First, let's cut to the chase. Warner and his team picks a day at random and then uses their computer tools to look at the commercial sex trade in Birmingham, Mobile, Huntsville, and Montgomery.
In Birmingham, we had 251 ads. In Mobile, we had 114. In Huntsville, we had 106. And in Montgomery, we had 89, which is about 550 ads, roughly. For a single day in four major cities in Alabama, 550 distinctly different advertisements.
560 when you total it up. Alabama is a small and rural location for trafficking compared to, say, Atlanta, which is considered to be a main hub in the southeast. Warner calls up Atlanta's numbers for the same day as Mobile, Montgomery, Birmingham, and Huntsville.
Basically, in an hour, we have 20 ads per hour being posted in Atlanta. That's considerably more than any Alabama city.
But if that hourly rate kept up for the whole day, Atlanta's total would be 480 ads. That's less than the 560 ads for the Alabama cities in Warner's study. The possible takeaway is that Alabama may be small, but not insignificant. Here's how he does it.
Yeah, so if we were to go to Birmingham ads.
Step one is to look at the pictures.
I'm on one of these sites, but this one, you'll notice the timestamps on these, and these are Birmingham, Alabama ads. One says 25 minutes ago, one has 33 minutes ago, 2 hours ago, there's several listed.
Warner clicks on one photo and then tells the computer to scan the web for other pictures just like it. Ad after ad appears with the same girl in the same pose as the original.
This one, the fact that it's across many different websites that aren't necessarily selling escort services, and the fact that the person's being called by a different name in each of the photos makes it more likely that this is one where they've stolen an image.
Then Warner calls up another example, and this time...
And in this case, the only copy of the image is from the website we're looking for. So this very likely is going to be that individual.
And Warner says the trail of clues doesn't end with whether a sex trafficking ad is real or not. It can also track if these young women are moving into and out of Alabama, either alone or in groups.
So if I can find five girls who are all in Atlanta on Monday and Birmingham on Tuesday and Chattanooga on Wednesday, but all five girls are in those cities on those days, that's usually something that we would consider an indicator of trafficking.
The trafficking roadshow Warner's describing typically starts here, in Atlanta. From Atlanta, the next step is often Interstate 20, which runs from Georgia west into Alabama. That road also splits into I-59, running between Birmingham, northeast to Chattanooga. Warner says those stretches of highway have already earned a reputation among human trafficking support groups.
What people refer to I-20, 2059, as being a sex trafficking highway, there are certainly girls that are trafficked up and down the I-20 corridor. And they certainly stop in Birmingham and provide services here.
It's easy to get the impression that Warner is focused on the numbers. He keeps the good data he finds on sex trafficking and discards the bad. But chasing cyber criminals isn't what got him into this line of work.
I had a daughter who was very troubled, had drug problems and sexual identity problems. went through a really hard time.
As a result, Warner and his wife started supporting the anti-human trafficking group A21, which operates in 14 countries. They founded through their church.
And my daughter said, you know, a lot of girls in a situation like mine, their parents throw them out of their house and they end up getting trafficked. So I'm glad that you guys are supporting that. Well, we lost my daughter a few years after that and kind of personally got involved in fighting human trafficking, kind of in memory of my daughter, to tell the truth.
APR heard similar stories on how runaways end up being trafficked.
You know, I shut down from my family and everyone that I knew to trust, but I developed a pure 15, 16, 17-year-old normal rebellion as well.
That's Dixie Shannon.
I just got fed up and tired with what I was seeing in my family. I just didn't beat to the drum that they beat to, so I ran away from home.
Within a short time, Shannon was being trafficked. Her first Johns were students at the college in Georgia where her family sent her to work at the age of 17. The National Human Trafficking Hotline quotes a study in Chicago that says 56% of women in the sex trade start off as runaways. This raises a sensitive question. Just because someone is a sex worker, does that automatically mean they're being trafficked? Even support groups for trafficking survivors disagree on this, but Gary Warner doesn't.
Our interpretation, and having talked to many sociologists and criminologists about this, there are very few true volunteer sex workers. Even if you claim you're a volunteer, your economic situation has likely driven you to this point of desperation.
The FBI says a young person in the sex trade is considered a trafficking victim. Adults, however, have to be forced into it through coercion, fraud, or deception. None of the women pictured in the ads Gary Warner showed us appear afraid. He says they don't need to.
There may be some people that are doing it for kicks and money, but usually there's some form of abuse or harm in the past that's caused them to gravitate towards this line of work.
National studies put the average starting age of a sex trafficking victim in the U.S. at between 11 and 15 years old. There, law enforcement says, the notion of choice doesn't enter into it. Pat Duggins, APR News, in Birmingham.